here to discuss all things NRL and anything sports related. Please give a warm Aussie g'day to the footy fanatic and America's own Corey Jackson in Outside the Sheds.
Greetings, salutations, and welcome to Outside the Sheds. Shedheads, the Shed Adamas has returned from a victorious Vegas run. Maybe not as victorious as what the NRL experienced for a Vegas run. Because, my friends, I've got to tell you something. If you would have told me a year ago that I would have experienced what I did for this last week, I wouldn't have said that you were crazy, but I also probably wouldn't be the same guy that would have thought the world was going to end a few years ago, too. What an incredible event the NRL put on. And maybe the most incredible thing is that your Shed Adamas wasn't drinking Jack and Cokes the entire weekend because higher power has him on the straight and narrow. But it was just something to behold. First off, when you have 14,000 Australians and Kiwis running around, you know that it's going to be an incredible party. You know that people are going to bring it 24/7, 365, as they would say. And it was that and then some. Now, I will tell you, the Shed Adamas is not a big guy about large crowds. I don't like being around tons and tons and tons of people. Even though I am the same guy that was at the 2000 Mardi Gras and down in the dirty in New Orleans, but those times were a long time ago, as you can see by what year it is now. But I just have to say that the moment we landed in Vegas, me and Mrs. Shed Adamas, there was a buzz in the city. I hadn't been back to Vegas since before the pandemic, so I think I was there in 2018, like I told you last week, for a wedding. But it was nothing close to the buzz that greeted us when we got there. I'm not a guy that plays the pokies. I don't play, you know, I'm not a gambler whatsoever. I just gamble in life. But besides that, I'm not going to give you money to throw craps or, you know, spin the wheel or anything like that. So it doesn't really do much for me once I step off and I see the pokies right there when you're that you can throw money down as you're trying to get on the plane to get in or out of Vegas. It fascinates me. But it was a buzz. We got to the hotel. We stayed at the Delano, which is right next to the Mandalay Bay, which is right across the road from Allegiant. So we had a great setting like that, and we were kind of mixed if we wanted to stay at Resort World where all the festivities were at, or if we wanted to be closer to the stadium. So Mrs. Shed Adamas chose the latter, and we stayed at the Delano. Nice hotel. I got to stay right next to Rafa Nadal. You know, Rafa and Carlos were getting ready to play on Sunday, so there were signs all over the place for those two. Madonna's Faithful was in town for her 2-day stint. But with all that being said, to me, the gig, the buzz in the city was the NRL and the excitement that was going on. There were billboards going on vehicles. There were signs all around with Victor the Inflictor on there breaking a tackle. It was just wow. That's all you can really say. So we got there on Thursday. We kind of got to check in our stuff and got to lay around a little bit. And then we went right down to Fremont Street for the fan fest and the kickoff kind of to the entire weekend. All the teams were there. It was a really good buzz down there. Fremont Street is something everyone should just behold. To say there's a lot of lights is like saying the sun is bright on a sunny afternoon. But there was just tons of people there. We got to see a full concert from a band from Australia, and I'm forgetting the name right now. It starts with an S. But, you know, seeing the teams come out, seeing the excitement there. My boy JT the Brick was actually the host of the was one of the hosts of the whole event. And I'm a big fan of JT. I know a lot of you who are listening overseas might not know who he is, but he's a sports radio guy over here. I've been listening to him for years. So seeing the Brick up there pumping Raider Nation was quite cool to see. But it just was, it was just great. So after the kind of festivity went down, Mrs. Shedd and I walked down, kind of got a feel of the street, went and got myself some caffeine I hadn't had, and he got a little Monster, came back, met a young lady that had won a package where she flew from Brisbane and got to stay the entire time, I think from Wednesday through Sunday, and then they gave her an extra 2 days on top of it for free. So she was jazzed, got some good gear, good merch. But then the highlight of the night was when I walked to the end of the street, and this is the funny thing, Mrs. Shedd Adamus spotted two important members to the rugby league world, and that is the great Fletch and Hindy, who are on the street doing some of their stuff, which you'll probably see on this Thursday. But I got to meet Brian Fletcher, Nathan Hindmarsh, two rugby royalty, rugby league royalty guys, and the two guys couldn't have been nicer. I you know, you see some of their antics they do on television, and they are nuts in that regard, but couldn't be more friendly. I gave Brian Fletcher one of my books. Him and Hindy signed an edition of my book that I kept for myself, but the guys were just really down to earth and cool. I don't know what I was expecting, but they really embraced myself, and they were laughing, and Mrs. Shedd Adamus was talking to Fletch's wife, so I thought that was quite funny. But then we went back towards where the center of the festivity was, and I look up, and again, Mrs. Shedd Adamus, I don't know if she was a sniper scout in a different life, but she spotted the great Raging Bull himself, Gordon Tallis, and Matthew Tiny Hands Johns, standing at a bar right off of where the celebration, the event had been, right? So half of me was like, I'm not going to bother the guys. I'm just going to leave. And then the other half was like, when am I going to be standing next to Gordy and Matty Johns ever again? And so we just went up there. And I got to tell you, it was one of the best decisions I've ever made. Gordon and I hit it off. We were talking about Mykonos, laughing. And then Maddie did a shoey. And it was just an incredible time. Getting, you know, just sitting there talking to the guys. And we probably stayed there an hour and a half, talking to them and hanging out. And then I was really, really, really blessed to meet Rebecca Frizzell, who is the owner of the Gold Coast Titans. And she was so insightful that I was kind of blown away. Because over in America, our professional sports team owners, I would never be able to sit back and have a beverage with Jerry Jones or the Davis family who owns the Raiders, right? But Becca Frizzell was one of the nicest people I've ever met. She was engaging. She didn't seem like she was put off by any means. And matter of fact, she was quite interested to talk to me about how a Yank like myself got into the game. And it was an incredible experience. And she was so nice. She talked to forever with Mrs. Shedd Adamus as well. And they really hit it off. I got to meet the Raging Bull's wife too. She was incredible. She was really, really friendly. But the question a lot of people always ask was, how did an American guy get into the game? And we've gone over this talking on this podcast before, how the game had kind of enveloped me and I just fell in love with it, you know, back in 2010, and it just moved on from there. But what an incredible night. And for those four guys from the Matty John Show and Rebecca Frizzell for the Gold Coast Titans, the owner, I want to thank all of you so very, very much for just being so engaging and so welcoming to me and the missus. It was an incredible night. And I think, like I said, Mrs. Shedd Adamus, you know, she knows the game. She knows I love the game, blah, blah, blah. But she was as high as I was leaving the seat. And fitness is everything, Sheddheads. The Shedd Adamus walked 18,000 steps that day. There was a lot of walking. There was a lot of walking. So when we finally got back to the hotel, it felt so good to sit down. I will admit that. On Friday, we went and we experienced NRL 360, the Matty John Show live. That was really, really cool. Now, there was a hurricane that feels like it broke out. Not as bad as Lake Tahoe, and there are 190-mile-per-hour winds. But it was darn cold. And I was just wearing a jersey, and I gave Mrs. Shetadamas my track jacket. And yeah, I will admit that I'm happy I'm from a colder climate because it was chilly. And if you watch either one of those shows on that Friday, the guys up on stage will admit they were cold too. But it was so cool to see both the shows, seeing Braith looking like a Don Corleone with his light cashmere long coat. It was a real cool event. Got to talk to Gordon again after the show finished up. They were getting ready to go film some stuff. So again, exceeding expectation. Really cool. Now, I might think again, you know, we've got a big resort there at Resort World. If the NRL does come back next year, maybe you don't. I know they want that feel of the strip, but those are pretty bad conditions that we were in. And I think it would have been a lot more encompassing if we maybe had an auditorium inside maybe one of those casinos, inside Resort World, for example, to actually have the, you know, the shows go place, because not enough people were standing. And I just don't think the NRL was expecting the turnout that they got. And so it was still great. Wouldn't change it for the world, but I think there was a few tweaks we could do later on, because if it rains, we're in a world of hurt, right? But that was great. Went back home, kind of rested up after that, and got ready for the Saturday night, the main event of both teams. The walk across to Allegiant Stadium on Saturday, you go over across a bridge, and because of the hurricane, I guess there was a wind warning for Las Vegas. So there was supposed to be a big event outside the stadium, outside of Allegiant, that was supposed to start at 3:30, and there was going to be music and all this type of stuff. Well, they canceled all of that because the wind was so bad, and it was kind of raining. So they actually let everybody into the stadium probably about 45 minutes before they were planning on doing it before. But the NRL, once again, it was all out. You could buy the game ball. They had a couple different areas where you could buy souvenirs. Allegiant, again, they call it the Death Star for a reason. Now, I don't know if Han and Chewie could get out of this one, but it is a spectacle to behold. And if the NRL, again, 5-year deal I know to come back, comes back to Allegiant, I definitely know where my seats will be next year. But it was great. I'm saying there wasn't a bad seat in the house. When they say that, they're not joking. Thankfully, Mrs. Shetadamas and myself bought our tickets early, so we were about the 40, so we were almost right at midfield. Great seats, got to see everything. I don't know how I missed Jonathan Thurston running around on the field, kicking a goal. So when I saw that happen, I was like, well, where the hell was I? I didn't even see JT. So I didn't see much in the 9 guys. I think Paul Gallen was up on stage a little bit, but didn't see Billy, didn't see any of those other guys, didn't see JT until allegedly he was in the same building. But it was two incredible games. Like I said, not a bad seat in the house. A lot of people were worried about the narrowness of the field and would that take away from the game at all. And it didn't. If you look at the scores of the two games, which we're going to go into here in a second, attack was still on display. It was a great event. And you don't see that often where things exceed expectation, but they did. And another way that you can say they exceeded expectation was the attendance of 40,746 fans. Wow. NRL, this has gone over so well. There's buzz going on that besides the two games next year, that there may be a possibility that the World Club Challenge could take place in Vegas instead of in Australia or in England, bringing together, you know, the Super League champion against the NRL champion. Now, think about that. Think about if we did Friday night World Club Challenge, Saturday the doubleheader of games. I don't know if you could have a better rugby league weekend, personally, myself. And I'm a guy that went to 2 straight days of the Auckland Nines, and I was blown away by that. So that was really great. Now, the question for me is, as we end that, and the thought of that weekend, is who's coming next? Who should the four teams be that come to this incredible grand stage of rugby league next season? And I've been thinking about that because you want to bring in all parts of the NRL. So I think it's a no-brainer. The number one team that'll be there for sure next year are the Warriors. I think the Warriors are going to have an incredible season this year, and we're going to talk about that here when we go into the 40-20 of my top eight predictions for the or my top eight teams for the final. But the Warriors have to be there. You know, if you can bring Sean Johnson over to America, you want to bring some of your marquee players. I think Sean's going to play another season besides this. I think that's what the plan was. So bringing the Warriors and that attacking, you know, you got RTS back. That for sure is my number one team that should be here next year. As I walked around Fremont Street and all around inside the stadium, there were Warriors jerseys everywhere. So I think the Warriors would travel well. So the Warriors are my number one team. My number two team, I think you've got to have representation from Queensland. Some people say the home of rugby league. Yes, Maroons, I know. There you go. I think you have to bring the Cowboys. I think North Queensland on that track would be an incredible team to watch. And I think that the Cowboys would be a great number two team. And that's where I start getting a little bit confused after that. Who should come over after that? Do you bring the Panthers and get Cleary on the big stage? Do you go with the Eels? Yes, Dom, the Eels. That means I will be partying with you next year. But the Eels, you know, one of the originals, 1947, get, you know, Parramatta over there. I think St. George might be a smoky to come over next year. And like I said, it's up for debate. So I would probably say the Panthers, even though you could bring them year three, you don't want all your marquee teams, and maybe St. George. Maybe that's your four that you bring over because you would have Western Sydney in there and then you would have Southern part. But either way, the great part about it is whichever four teams make the trip next year, they're ready because I think we're going to get 60,000 in there next year, personally. I think there will be 60,000 in that stadium. So, NRL, incredible job. Thank you so very much for the hospitality. I didn't see any type of stupid activity. There was a little bit of a brouhaha around our seats where we were at. But nothing really, really transpired from that. So, you know, great job, NRL. I can't wait till next year. Mrs. Shetadamas is even excited about it. She wants to get on it earlier. She knows exactly where she wants our seats to be. So, great job. Can't wait till next year. Now, let's go into the games a little bit. The first game of the night was the Sea Eagles and the Rabbitohs. Sea Eagles 36, Rabbitohs 24. I will tell you right off the bat, Manly was impressive. They get down early, but they didn't even think twice. I'm saying they just looked like the better team from the start. Yes, like I said, South Sydney got up to an early lead. But they looked like the fitter side, Manly did. That was the other thing. South Sydney looked tired. And I know a lot of things about South Sydney. They usually don't get into form until usually around the midpoint of the season, maybe week 5, 6. Maybe 7. I know Jack Whiten wasn't there. I know Campbell Graham wasn't there. But they just looked a team that was really, really tired. And Manly, on the other hand, looked like they were fit and could run for days. So that was one of the things that really stood out to me. DCE, I wanted to really touch on. Daly Cherry Evans. I cannot believe Daly Cherry Evans, first off, is 35 years old. He may be the fittest guy on the team. And if you think about DCE, he doesn't get injured. Shedheads, tell me the last time DCE missed weeks from an injury. I can't think of it. I can't think of a time where he had to miss time. And I know he's a rugby league player, so you know he's carrying injuries, you know, after the middle of the season. But DCE, at the age of 35, he may be the Tom Brady of the NRL because how fit he is, the game that he plays, you would never think he's 35 years old. So I don't know why Daly Cherry Evans couldn't easily play till he was 40 if he wants to, as long as he stays injury free. I'm saying the guy is brilliant. the way he orchestrates the team, the Manly side around, and now that he's got Luke Brooks in the side with him, now he's got a running 5/8. It lets him sit back and organize the team, and then lets Luke Brooks run and just kind of manifest his own magic. And then Brooksy, you know, you look at Luke Brooks, it's probably the best team that he's played on, or the team that has the most potential that he's played on for a very, very long time. Hasn't played finals footy, so this is really a chance for him to show out, to show what he's got. You know, I don't think he ever was able to shake that the mantle they put on him as the next Andrew Johns. And I think that was a lot of pressure coming out of the box. And then he was supposed to be the savior of the Tigers. It never happened. So this is a chance for him now to be on a team where he's not the man. DCE's the man. Turbo's the man. Jake's the man. So he's, you know, I wouldn't say he's low on the pecking order, but he's definitely not in the top three of Manly's best guys that everybody loves and they want to be around. So Luke can kind of sit back and just kind of do his game and not have to worry about being the centerpiece or the front action. So, you know, that's something that I think we need to watch. And I don't really know what we're fully going to get out of Luke Brooks, because I think that he could be pretty darn special this year, especially after the game he just had to start the season. Now, Jason Saab, there's a player right there. Watching him live it's like watching a Ferrari that pulls up to a light and then you nod over at him like you're going to beat him in your Honda Civic, and him dropping the hammer on it, and then you don't even see anything but his taillights, right? That's Jason Saab. When he got that cutout pass interception, he was gone. There was nobody that was going to catch that guy. He is something special. A lot of people say he's the fastest man in the NRL. I can't say that he's not. I would love to see a race between him and some of the competition. But like a fine sports car, they're prone to injury and a lot of maintenance repair. And with that hamstring injury, now it looks like he's going to be out 6 to 8, you know, 6 games, maybe 8 games because of it. I would be surprised if he comes back in 4. I know there's been a little bit of buzz and a little bit of talk that he might come back in 4. I don't think that's going to be the case, because I think Manly's going to want to make sure that he's 100% healthy before they play him again. But he was something special and something fun to watch. And I've got to tell you, if you're a Manly supporter, as long as Turbo stays healthy, as long as a lot of injuries don't happen, you really have a strong chance to make the top 8. Now for the second game, the game that had me really, really excited, Roosters versus the Broncos. I think this is going to be a precursor. I think this is a match that we're going to see later in the season. When we get to finals time, I think these are going to be two teams that are actually fighting for that gigantic trophy that we play for, if you know what I mean. But I think the big thing about it is the Chooks finally start a season with a victory. It's been a few seasons since the Chooks have won round one. And you could really see there was a lot of focus on the Sydney players to get on top of Brisbane and to get that victory. Because last year, they just couldn't get out of their own way. The Chooks couldn't. And by the time the season they got into the finals, but I think they were shot. I think how they had to play later in the season just to get in the finals, they didn't have a lot left. So Trent Robinson was going to have his guys ready. They looked fit. They looked ready. Luke Keary is comfortable now. He's got his contract extension. The Cheese ran out of the dummy half position when he needed to. And I think that's big. I think Teddy looked like the Teddy of old. 212 running meters in the game. That's a good start to a season. And I think James Tedesco has a lot to prove, especially if he wants to get that Blues jumper back now that Madge McGuire is the coach and not Freddie. So he's already got a great start to the season the way that he played. He looked dialed in. He looked ready. And a guy that I got to tell you, he's one of my favorite players in the game, Joey Manu. That flick pass he did, I was so happy for, because that's the excitement stuff that the American fan base needed to see. And him going up against Cabo, I've got to admit, Manu totally outplayed Cabo. And I know that it was his first time being in the centers compared to being at fullback. But Manu is a special player. And if anybody doesn't think that, you just don't watch the game. If they don't sign him to an extension and get him to stay, I know he's already told people and said there's been rumblings that for sure he's signing with French rugby for like $1 million plus a season. And I don't really know. I think that the big wigs at the Roosters could actually sell some of their car dealerships maybe, because that's how important it is, I think, for them to keep Joseph Manu. He is a marquee player. He adds such strike in that team. He's special all the way around. Because think about this. If Teddy goes down, you're putting Manu back at fullback. So Manu, again, impressed. I was impressed all the way around. And then, unfortunately, Shedheads, we have to talk about right now the biggest story in rugby league. We're going to go into it a little bit more, the 40-20. But the Spencer Lanu, Ezra Mam, racial debacle that's possibly going on. I'm not going to let that. I know that that is the big story leaving Vegas right now. What's going to happen in that situation? The rallying that's going around in the rugby league community and the NRL from a lot of the indigenous players and players saying, you know, this needs to be stamped out of the game. But I am not letting my Vegas experience, my Vegas trip be defined by one bad moment when everything else about that weekend, that week that I got there, it's just not going to happen. So NRL, great job. All four teams, you guys played really, really well. And I just have to tell you that I was blown away from the beginning. And it exceeded my expectation. And I was already giddy going into it. So Vegas, I guess I'm going to see you in about another year. So great job, NRL. Now, as we go into the 40-20, we're going to start it right where we ended this last conversation with racism in the NRL, racism from this standpoint of this moment that just happened. I know there's been moments that have happened, even in the time frame that I've watched it, from some homophobic slurs to some racial slurs that have happened, and you know, players being fined, all that type of stuff. Lanu is going to face judiciary Monday, our time, I think Tuesday, Australia time. And I'm really curious to see what Peter Vlandis, Andrew Abdu do and what they push for in this situation. They have to stamp this out. And the only way you're going to stamp this out is two ways. One, scare players that might have a little bit of this in them that they can't do it because they're going to be gone 8 to 10 weeks, maybe half the season, right? So when you put that type of fear in a player, you remember it. And unfortunately, there's always got to be that player that's going to take that brunt right on the nose that's really going to hit him. But I think listening to Spud Carroll and some other figures in the game say something, I think how you hit players in the mouth is to find them. And I know that the NRL players don't make Patrick Mahomes, you know, money. But if you find Spencer Lanu $100,000 and teams see that, players see that, I don't think you'll hear them say anything but ma'am and sir out of their mouth going forward. You have to be brutal in this situation. You have to come down with the hammer. You have to make them know that this just isn't tolerated. And I think the only way you do that is you have to go over the top with a fine or suspension. I think it's both, personally. But you have to make the mark. You have to leave precedent, as they would say in Legal Channel, on what we're trying to get across. And that is, this is not acceptable. It won't be tolerated. And then the next guy, if they do it, you fine him $200,000 and he misses the season. And you let people know that. If you do this, this is what comes next. And that's how you get rid of this type of stuff. You know, racism, unfortunately, is everywhere. You know, they're saying it's a bad thing when they were going back to Australia. And I'm like, I live in America. Racism runs rampant in our country. Half the reason we talk about a lot of our problems here isn't because people are really scared of things. They're scared of too many people that don't look like them coming into countries or being next to them. And so racism, as long as there's humans, there will be racism. That's unfortunately what it is. It's just what we are as a species. But is it right? Heck no. And the problem is there's too many racists that have been allowed to exist now. So a lot of people feel emboldened to say their racial spouting of BS or whatever. And the fear a racist used to have has kind of gone out the window. And I think that we need to make racists afraid again. I think we need to make a hat that says that. Make racists afraid again. Yeah, maybe that's what the Shed of Domus will make, is a new hat to sell. But it's going to be interesting to me what the NRL does at Judiciary, what they can prove. Because some people say that they can't see what Spencer Lemieux said. But if you look at the video, Billy Walter's reaction is a reaction that someone said something. And you've got two players now that say that they will testify that they heard Spencer Lemieux use the terminology that he used towards Ezra Mann. And I think they've got to throw the book at him. But it is really nice to see guys like Nico Hines, Latrell Mitchell, who you know Latrell has no problem speaking out against racism with some of the things he's experienced, really coming to Ezra Mann's defense and to speak their mind that this just isn't tolerated. So be paying attention, Shedheads, because when that ruling comes down, that will be a focal point that a lot of people will be talking about for the next few weeks. Excuse me. Now, let's go to my top eight predictions, who I think is going to finish in the top eight and will make the finals this year. My number one team is one of the teams we just watched this last weekend, and that is the Sydney Roosters. You know, I know. Leave me alone, Shedheads. I know I picked the Roosters high last year, but I wasn't the only one who did that. And I can't help if they underachieved a little bit. But that's not going to be the case. You've got Robbo as a coach. Trent Robinson has learned a lot from last season, and he will not let this affect him this year. So I've got the Roosters as my number one team. My number two team, another team from Vegas. And I think this was a real toss-up for me, who could be one and two. But I knew it would probably be these two teams. But my number two team are the Brisbane Broncos. I think Kevy's got it rolling up there. It will be interesting to see how the loss of a few players could affect this side. But I think, you know, with Reese Walsh, Adam Reynolds, Ezra Mann, Selwyn Cabo, I think, you know, Patrick Kerrigan, I think that you have just a staple for a young, damn hungry team. And I think that those guys, under Kevy's tutelage, will actually come back and really be firing towards the end of the season. So I've got the Broncos as my number two team. My number three, the team going for the quattro, the team trying to put up four fingers, I've got the Penny Panthers as my number three team. I think Luai and Cleary, this being their last ride together before Luai joins the Tigers next year, I think that that team is going to push hard to try to get that fourth championship. Because right now, three is incredible. You know, heck, some teams can't get more than one. Three in a row is incredible. But if they do four, they're going to go down as history as the best team in rugby league history. And so, very interesting to see. But I think that I think the Panthers aren't done yet. And I've got the Panthers as my number three team. My number four team, and I'm really excited about this team, probably more excited about this team than I am any other team if they can put it together. I have the New Zealand Warriors as my number four team, making it into the top four. To me, it all comes down to health of the team. And to me, that health is Sean Johnson. I know Sean played most of last season. I think Sean should have been the Dally M winner of last year. That's my opinion. But I think he has a point to prove. I think he knows what that team needs. With Roger Tuivasa-Sheck back, Chanel Harris-DeVia back, I think the Warriors are going to fire. And if the Warriors finish higher than fourth, I have to admit to you, Shedheads, I would not be surprised either. I think this team is going to do some real damage this year. So I've got the Warriors as my number four. My surprise is my number five team. I've got the Newcastle Knights as my fifth team. I think Kalyn Ponga, as long as he stays, you know, I think with all these players, as long as they stay healthy, that's the number one thing in the room. But I think Gamble Jackson Hastings, they're starting in the halves again. I think that team, I think they're ready. I think I just for something has me really excited about Newcastle, and I think that the Knights are going to be knocking on the top four. So I've got the Knights at five. I think after a disastrous 2023, I've got the Cowboys, is my number six team. They looked incredible in the preseason, and I know preseason is preseason, but I think that this team has a lot to prove. Was 2022 a fluke, or was 2023 a fluke? Which one was a fluke? And they're out to prove that 2023 was a fluke. So I've got the Cowboys at six. You can't leave a top eight out right now as long as he's the head coach. I've got the Storm, Cameron Munster, even though he's injured. I guess he's pulled his groin in Fiji in a bathtub. What more can you say about that? But I still think that the Storm have enough in them. And they could finish even higher than this. But the one thing I do know is the Storm will be in the top eight when the season ends. And my last team, and this is a toss-up, because I had a real tough time picking number eight, because I think it's either going to be the Rabbitohs or the Seagulls. And I'm going to go with the Rabbitohs right now. I think that the injury to Saab could be a major problem, and Manly could be behind the eight ball earlier in the season because of that injury. But I just for some reason think that Jack Whiten and Campbell Graham's going to come back later in the season. I just think that the Rabbitohs find a way to get into the top eight, and that they solidify the team that the last team that will be playing in the finals. But if they get a lot of injuries on their team and Manly stays healthy, it could be the Seagulls at eight too. But I'm gonna go with the Rabbitohs at this current time. So let's go into round one and our picks. We started all off tonight, a game I'm really, really excited about. Sticky's boys going back up to the Hunter. Raiders versus the Knights. I think this is, you know, this is a game we watched in the finals last year where Newcastle did an incredible comeback to push themselves farther into the finals round. But I'm going with the Knights tonight. I think that stadium is going to be electric tonight. And I think the Knights get the victory to start off, I guess, the second part of round one. Friday, we've got the Sharks versus the Warriors from Auckland. I know that this is going to be a fun game, but I'm going to go with the Warriors at home. I think it's going to be close to a sellout, if not a sellout. It's so exciting to see the New Zealand people really embracing the Warriors and getting behind them. Up the Waz, everybody says. So I've got the Warriors winning over the Sharks to start Friday night. And then the big one, Panthers versus the Storm. Panthers versus the Storm. Bellyache's possible last year as the head coach of the Storm. And he's never lost opening round. He's never lost round one against Nathan Cleary and a Panthers side who got robbed by Wigan. And I think it ends. I think that... No, I don't. I got you, didn't I? That was a little bait and switch right there. I've got Bellyache and the Storm winning a close one, but it is in Melbourne. They are going to be the talk of the town. There's no games in Melbourne for the AFL this week. So I'm going with the Storm and Bellyache keeping that streak alive. Saturday, we've got three games. We've got the Bulldogs versus the Eels. A Bulldog side that's got a new captain like we talked about last week, Stephen Crichton. And an Eels side that doesn't have Mike Acebo because of his high hit and being put on suspension. I think that's going to be a major factor in this. So I'm going with the Dogs winning week one over the Eels. Then we've got the Dragons versus the Titans. Desi's back. Back again. Desi's back. Back again. That's right. Desi Hasler back in charge of a club. Gold Coast Titans, from Desi's mouth, not mine. The team is so tired of him. He has not made preseason fun. He has pushed and pushed and pushed the players. And I think that the Gold Coast Titans needed that. So that's right, Becca. I am picking the Titans to beat the Dragons. Even though it's good to have Shane Flanagan back as a coach in the NRL, I just think the Titans have a point to prove and they get that first victory of the season. And finally, we've got a Queensland tussle. Cowboys versus the Dolphins. Fins up. I know, P-H-I-N-S. But I'm going with the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys are going to have a really, really good season this year. And I'm very, very excited to see how Dearden plays in the halves. It's going to be fun. I think that they're going to really fire out. And I really think that this is going to be a special season for North Queensland. And I think it starts with a victory over the Finns. So, Shedheads, it's a little bit shorter episode this week. We don't have full games. But again, get excited. They're planning on having more games in the NRL this year on FS1, FS2. So we should be able to get more of the games. You know, you can always, you know, watch the games on Watch NRL like I do. But besides that, tune in, get excited. Can't wait. Season 2024 has kicked off. Vegas, you're beautiful. But until next week, try to treat each other well, Shedheads. But this is Corey Jackson. You've been listening Outside the Sheds. Until next week, see ya.
And that was another fantastic episode of Outside the Sheds with Corey Jackson, talking all things NRL and all things sports. So please remember to smash the subscribe button and share this with your family and friends and show them what Australian sport is all about.